Heidi's got the original. She can make some more copies. So tonight's discussion is a little atypical. Gerald and Randy had asked me, I guess there was a request for a talk on internet home security. I had envisioned to have a couple of different nights set up for this, one more of a adult security related, so kind of related to identity theft and how to protect your home and whatnot around that, and the second night more around keeping your kids safe online, so keeping them from, you know, online bullying, the kind of dangers that are out there today. So so that was the original vision. However, I found out recently that I'm supposed to be out of town next week for an IT conference. So Bill has graciously accepted to take the second night's version of that. So I'll be just going through the home internet security tonight. So I'm going through this. There's quite a bit to cover here, but if there's any questions, IT people like to talk in a lot of TLAs, so three-letter acronyms. So if I do that too much, please just stop me or raise your hand or just yell out for me. So to slow down, or if I need to explain anything further. So all right. So on the sheet we've got out here, I kind of go over some of the why this might be important to you. Some of the statistics around internet security. Gartner, which is one of an agency that does a lot of research in a lot of different industries, estimates that the country spent about $93 billion on data security related products just last year alone. They spend a ton of money. One of the jokes that we have at the bank is if there's a project that you're trying to get through and you're having a hard time funding it, one of the ways you get that funded is try to tie it back to internet security. So, well, if we don't do this, there's a chance we might get hacked. So usually the CEO is pretty okay with approving those kinds of requests. So some of the breaches that we've had over the last few years, you can see on here, we've had back in 2011, Sony PlayStation Network had about 77 million accounts got compromised. LinkedIn in 2012, 165 million. Yahoo lost 3 billion accounts worth of information back in 2013, and on here. The more recent ones, we've got Facebook just this year back in March, lost 87 million. MyFitnessPal, May 2018, lost 150. And MyHeritage, which does I believe like DNA testing and whatnot, lost about 92 million accounts just this past June. This could be anywhere from just accounts and passwords to, I mean, MyHeritage. I hadn't seen the exact data that was lost there, but it's kind of scary that people might have information about your actual DNA and about your very personal things related to yourself. So. I was in a manager's meeting this morning and got an email on my phone. If anybody here shop on Newegg, it's a big IT site that sells a lot of electronics. Just got an email today saying they had lost accounts, and that urged you to go out and change your password and whatnot. And that was just this morning, so we still don't know how many were lost there. As far as losses and how it applies to individuals, one in five people have lost money due to identity theft, with a median of about $500 per incident, per person. This can range, I mean, to $50 to several thousand dollars and whatnot, and trying to get this stuff unraveled after the theft has occurred. This can be anywhere from somebody posing and then submitting for a credit card to opening up an account, bank account, so on and so forth. So trying to unravel the stuff after the fact can be a really, really big pain. So some of the ways to prevent identity theft, or kind of identify some of these things, and I go through my notes here, I've tried to kind of order it by more of the easy, actionable items up front, and then it kind of gets a little more technical as I go on through the notes. There's a few technical parts in the middle there too, but So we'll kind of go through that order. So one of the first ways to check whether or not you might be a either a target or a potential victim of identity theft or of, you know, your account information being stolen, there's a website called, and it's letter B on the handout here, Have I Been, and it's PWNT, or Have I Been Pwned, as they call it in the internet terminology. You can type your email address in here, and it'll go out and check a lot of the dark web information, which basically says, okay, you know, does that email address pop up, and is there a password tied to that account? And they'll actually show you the email address and the last few digits of your password, so you know pretty quickly if it's out there. If it's out there, you want to change your account immediately. Do that right then. Don't wait on that. Usually the people that are unscrupulous on the web will go out and find that information. They'll go out and check a lot of other sites to see whether or not that same username and password have been reused other places, like your bank account information or like Amazon or whatnot that you might have your credit card stored in. So you want to be very, very careful about that. So that's one easy way to check pretty quickly. Password security, some of the things around that, don't make your password easy to guess, rather. Don't have it password one or, you know, all ones or whatnot. You want to use, a lot of sites will tell you want to use uppercase, lowercase, letters, numbers, and so on and so forth out there. Some of those can be kind of difficult to remember, especially if you're storing different passwords on different websites. One of the ways to make it more secure and a little bit easier to remember is using something called a passphrase. On C2 there, I've got an example that I found online. Somebody said, you know, like just a random set of words or even a portion of a sentence is easier to remember individual letter or individual words as opposed to remembering letters, and if you're swapping letters for numbers and whatnot. So the example I've got here is logic finite eager ratio. I don't use that one, but it's one suggestion. Let's see here. Most common method of changing passwords is just to add a number at the end of your existing password. So it worked. We see this a lot. So if you've got if you use a password to sign into your computer at work, you'll type out a name or a word or whatnot, and then put like a number at the end of it. Well, 90 days later, most work companies will say, hey, you need to change your password. So you just go out and add one to it, and then add another one to it, and so on and so forth. Or if you're fairly unsecure, you just swap back and forth between two of them sometimes. So the problem is with that, a lot of hackers know that. So if they find out, so say you've got a Yahoo account that was, you know, Smart Road 1, and then you got it hacked, you change it to Smart Road 2, a lot of hackers and whatnot will go out and try that next one up to see whether or not that's the same, or if that one works or not. Let's see here. Another way that works a little bit better, but might cost, it can either cost you some money or afraid, depending on how secure you want this. There's a set of software called Password Manager. I've got a few options on here laid out. There's a bunch of other ones out here too, but there's some paid versions and some free ones. The one I personally use is called Dashlane, but there's another one called LastPass, and there's just a whole plethora of them. Most of them are online services. One of the nice things with the password managers, especially the subscription-based password managers, is that they will monitor a lot of the online websites and find out, you know, if there has been a recent breach. They'll let you know about it and say, okay, hey, there was a breach here. You need to go out and change your password. Or some of them are even advanced enough where they'll go ahead and change it for you and then just let you know after the fact. You don't really have to manage passwords at that point. Basically, you have to manage one to get into the software, and then it manages all the other passwords itself. So you can make ultra secure ones that you don't have to remember. It remembers them all for you. So now if you lose that one, you're in trouble. But a lot of those you want to have like a, some of them will have multi-factor authentication, which I'll get into that in a little bit, which just makes it harder to harder to hack into. So Dashlane and LastPass are a couple of examples of the paid password managers. And then there's, here we've got three of them on the next page there that are free. KeyPass is a piece of software that you can install on your, just on your computer that'll manage those. PasswordSafe is the same way. One of the other nice things about the paid ones is that they'll manage it across multiple devices. So if you hit Yahoo and you change your password for Yahoo, it will know that if you go to Yahoo on your phone, or Yahoo or Amazon on your phone, it needs to be synced up with your computer at home, and it'll automatically do those things for you. So that's worth it, my opinion. But some of the ones that you just have installed locally won't do that part for you. You'll have to go out and update those, or it'll just work on your computer at home. I got a new phone here recently. It's a Motorola that has a software on it called Moto Key, which is kind of nice. It'll allow you to authenticate to websites on your computer with a fingerprint on your phone. So I can go out to a website, and then as soon as I get to the website, it'll say, hey, if it already has the password in a database on the computer, it'll say, hey, I see you've authenticated before. Can you put your fingerprint on the phone? And it'll automatically authenticate you for you that way. So just one more option. Any questions so far? Sure. That's a good question. A lot of times they'll notice that you're getting, so it'll be running as a service on your computer, and it'll say, hey, I think you typed in a password. Do you want me to save it? So you don't actually have to manage a lot of that stuff. It'll just automatically do that. It'll see that that you typed one in, and it'll ask, hey, do you want to save this for the next time you hit it? So that's a great question, though. If you wanted to type one in or change it after the fact, you can do that as well. So get ready. So the dark web is a good question. So a lot of times when when hackers or when hacker's kind of a loose term. A hacker is somebody that likes to go out and tinker with computers and whatnot. You've got scrupulous hackers and unscrupulous ones. The unscrupulous ones like to log in and try to steal information and sell that information after the fact. We'll go in, steal a bunch of these accounts, or get into like the Experian one later on and whatnot, and they'll get on there, steal the information, and put it up for sale on different websites. And a lot of these will have millions of account numbers in those. They can sell them for a lot of money, and then they don't actually steal or do the identity theft themselves. They're just transferring that information over to the people that do that. So, yeah, great question. Does that answer? Yeah, that's. Yeah. You're probably not going to, you'll find information about it, but you're probably not going to find those sites very easily. They don't publicize them that well. At least, granted, I haven't went out looking for that information outside of, but yeah, Bill.
The reason they call it dark web is it's not virtual.
Exactly. Yep.
It's in the dark corner of your flashlight or something.
Right. Every kind of dictionary word that you could think of with numbers at the end of it and whatnot, they've got algorithms that try all of those and can try billions of those passwords in just a matter of seconds. So that's why a lot of the passphrases and whatnot are the very complex ones are really recommended, either very, very complex ones or doing things like biometrics and whatnot. So it can help some of that. Biometrics meaning like your fingerprint or, it's someday maybe your retinal scan or facial recognition and whatnot. So, okay, let's see here. So, when available, you want to if you ever see something called two-factor authentication, this is something that's very helpful to have turned on. This basically forces the person that's logging in to have something. They need two forms of authentication. So for a single factor, it's just a name and a password. Most sites will just accept that and they'll let you in. With multi-factor, is usually you have to type in a name and a password, and they'll either text you a number, or if some people are familiar with the RSA key fobs, you basically have a little device that you keep on your keychain that has a number that changes every minute, and then you have to type in that number along with your password to be able to get in. So if somebody hacks your password, they still can't get in unless they have that number. Or in most cases, like with your bank, most banks and whatnot, they'll ask for your cell phone number, and they'll text you a code that you then have to turn around and type in, and you'll have to renew that every few weeks and whatnot. That's the way we do it at our bank anyway. So this is much stronger than a password alone. Again, if somebody goes out and hacks your username and password, they still can't get in unless they have something that you physically would have with you. And most, I would say, I don't know if most, but a lot of online banking sites and email providers, like if you have a Gmail account, even Gmail has multi-factor authentication turned on. So if it sees that, hey, you know, you're logging in from a different location than you normally do, or you're doing different activities that you probably don't normally do, so hey, can you go ahead and verify that you really are who you say you are? Even though you gave me a password, give me this code that I'm going to text you your mobile phone. Next up, we've got here home internet security. And this kind of covers a lot of different hardware and software pieces. One, try not to make yourself an easy target when you're setting up your home network. It's not about having this perfect network, but it's just more about having, you know, making it harder than average to get in. When people are trying to hack into a home network or to your home computer, they're not looking for people that have a little bit of security. They're looking for people that are wide open for the most part. So try to keep at least some of these in place, and you're probably going to protect yourself from the vast majority of hacking attempts. Let's see here. Run antivirus software. If you don't already have antivirus software, please go out and get antivirus software. They have free versions of antivirus software out there that'll will do just fine. They'll do a lot of basic scanning for you. In fact, Windows 10 I think ships with one called Windows Defender. They also have something called Bitdefender, which is a paid for version that gives you a little more functionality. And a few other ones on here, Kaspersky, Bitdefender, and we have McAfee at work. We're getting ready to change over to another system. But there's several of them out there. A lot of the paid versions provide more than just antivirus. So I should back up. So if you're not familiar with it, viruses, basically, viruses and malware, you'll hear virus, malware, ransomware, and whatnot. Basically, all of these are programs that these unethical hackers have put out that try to either get you to pay money or to try to steal information off of your computer or off of your account. Some of them can go out and just destroy your computer, so you basically have to reload it from scratch. Some of them, you know, just steal information behind the scenes. Some of them will take over your machine and allow them to control your machine and have your machine actually attack another machine, which we see a lot happening. They're called DDoS attacks, where somebody will have software distributed out to hundreds of thousands of machines, and they'll have all those machines talk to one machine, like at an Amazon or at a bank or whatnot, and try to bring that network down. So you may not be doing anything yourself, but you could have actually been an accomplice in an attack against a larger company. One of the scary parts about that is a lot of times they'll do that to basically distract the IT folks, so they're trying to work on getting their site back up and online. They'll have somebody else go in and actually steal the information while that's happening. So we haven't had that happen at our bank before, but I've read plenty about how these work usually, so it can be kind of scary. Let's see here. So with antivirus, viruses will usually cause some damage on the computer, allow the hacker to take over the computer. Malware can do a whole range of things, from taking over a computer to just causing to leak information and cause other issues out there. If you haven't heard of ransomware before, this is another big one. It got really big a few years ago. It's still an issue today. But basically what that is a piece of software that gets loaded on your computer, and it can be from you visiting a specific website that has something downloads whenever you hit the site that you're not even aware of, that basically it runs in the background and it encrypts your entire hard drive. So if you've got a computer that has thousands of pictures on it and whatnot, and tax documents and everything else, it'll basically silently in the background be encrypting that drive. And encrypting it means that you can't unencrypt it unless you have a key. Okay, you won't have that key. The person that loaded it will have that key. When it's finished doing the encryption process, it'll say, "Hey, you need to pay this person X amount of dollars to decrypt that your drive to be able to get all of your stuff back. If you don't, the price will either go up or your information will be gone forever." So it'd be kind of scary if you've got kids' pictures out there from when they were little and whatnot. I mean, that's pretty big deal, and they can charge several hundred dollars and thousands of dollars sometimes to be able to get that information back. So antivirus software will help you keep from getting that stuff loaded on your machine. So another way to help combat some of this is to run regular backups. Backups on your computers can go so from your phones, from your PCs and whatnot, if you can run a backup locally, that's great. But if you get a ransomware loaded on the machine, that backup is going to be bad too. So there's a lot of software packages out there that let you back up to the cloud, which a cloud, if you're not familiar already, is basically, we just call it somebody else's computer. That's all it is. So it's a computer that Microsoft owns or Amazon owns or Google owns, that you're just backing up to their hardware, and they have millions and millions of dollars worth of infrastructure in place to keep that stuff safe. So backing it up to a secure environment like that, like a Google or Amazon, or there's several paid packages out there like Carbonite. Trying to think of some others that I had. But they'll basically allow you to just point to, you pay for the service, it might be $60 a year or whatnot, it'll just back up your whole machine out to the cloud. If you lose your machine or it gets a malware attack on it or whatnot, you wipe the machine off and say, okay, just download all the stuff again. It might take some time to get it all back, but at least you've got it safe. So let's see here. Consider using ad blocking software. There's free ad blocking software out there. The one I use is called AdAware. If you're online and you'll constantly be bombarded by ads. If you're on Facebook or on Amazon or anywhere else, you get these ads all over the place on the screen. AdAware will basically filter a lot of that stuff out. The ads in and of themselves aren't that harmful in my opinion, but it depends on how much privacy you want. If you're visiting a website, say at Amazon, you're looking for a particular product, Amazon is scraping all that information, and then they'll sell a lot of that information to other sites that can also advertise for the thing that you're looking for. If you don't want to share that stuff, ad blocker software will help out with that somewhat. Basically just get a blank area on the screen whenever those ads pop up. So, and that is, AdAware is free. So, do you have a question, Randy, or anybody else? Yep, absolutely. I've got, it's just a little bit further down here, so. Let's see here. Apologies, I may have to skip a little bit of this. I didn't really have this all timed when I was putting my notes together, so. Let's see here, I'll skip down to, page 3 here. You want to stay on top of firmware updates. So that can be firmware and other software updates on both your router is the piece of machinery that whenever your internet connection comes into your house, it usually goes to a router, and then your router manages connections to all the other machines in the house. There was fairly recently a kind of a scare that went out from these Russians that were taking over a lot of home routers. They were all Cisco-based routers. And basically they could do botnet attacks with those. You could do a lot of things that you don't want your home network affiliated with. So making sure those are updated fairly, not too far behind and whatnot, is always a good thing to do. Make sure you're up on Windows updates and Office updates and whatnot. They come out with patches every month for a lot of these things. So if you're running that stuff at home, just make sure it's either getting updated. A lot of the stuff you can just turn on auto updates. So for Microsoft, a lot of times as soon as an update comes out, you can tell it just to automatically download, so you don't have to do it every month or each time it does. So the cartoon I've got on here is what we see every single day at the bank with updates. They'll go out and we'll have a critical update. This particular one says, hey, you know, this update fixes a problem that causes random electrical fires. You might want to apply that. And I said, well, you're going to have to restart your computer, though. It's like, we'll ignore that. Do it later. So don't ignore those. Let's see here. Make sure that, you know, nobody in your house is visiting any questionable sites that might have like file sharing software installed on. Those are very typically come with a lot of malware on those, if not the piece of software that you'd be using to download the stuff, but the downloads themselves, almost they have a ton of malware in them. Do not use those. And don't let them be installed on a computer in your network. My sister actually had an issue a while back where she got a letter from Cox, I think, saying that, hey, you know, we saw that you were sharing like these episodes of South Park and whatnot. She's never watched South Park in her life. It's like, I have no idea what this is. So she sent me the letter and whatnot, and somebody had hacked into her network and were basically sharing that stuff from her machine so they didn't get in trouble for it. So I mean, stuff like that, you don't even know about it. And she told Cox about that, and I'm like, okay, yeah, they dropped the charges, but that's something that you could get fined a lot of money for if you're caught sharing that information. And the Millennial Digital Copyright Act and whatnot, they're very very good at finding out where those are coming from, and I know several people have been prosecuted for that. So just be careful with that. Don't share it, and then even if you don't knowingly share it, you can still get in trouble for it. So, the next point here, don't let your kids, especially young kids, install software. I know Lauren and Silas, they love to play video games off of like PBS Kids and whatnot. And, you know, I think a popular one they were using was called Red Ball. There's other ones out there that they can install. It's just all browser-based. They can install that. A lot of those can have malware in them too. So just make sure you're watching what they be installing on your computer. If you have young kids that like to do those kinds of things, or you know, like to play video games on there. Let's see here. Sorry, I'm going through trying to find out what important parts here I can, or what not so important parts I can skip. To Randy's point earlier, be careful where you log in from. You can log in from home, you know, work, hotel, not so much the library anymore, probably not so much friends' house. You've got all that stuff on your phone these days, just goes over the network. But if you're logging into their Wi-Fi, all of that stuff can be watched. You can have software on there that scans every bit of information that goes across there, from usernames and passwords and whatnot. If it's not encrypted, all that stuff can be sniffed out. So just be careful about what you're typing in there. If you're on a network that you're not familiar with, there's ways around that. There's something called a VPN that we use at work that allows us to, it's called tunneling into our network at work, and then the connection from there to like a Amazon or whatnot would be protected from the local connection that we're connected to. But let's see. Hope, like I said, we're getting ready to travel next week, and the hotel is one that I think just about everybody uses if they're out and about. You want to get online, check your you know, weather, you know, where you're going to stay the next night or whatnot. That's what we always do. We get on the hotel network and check it out. Well, like I said, just be aware that that's all. That all can be watched. Yeah, Gerald. So make sure you've got antivirus software on there to begin with, so that if there's a virus that comes along with it, it won't be installed to begin with. Most of antivirus software will just stop it before it's actually installed. If it's already installed or it's installed before you put antivirus on there, antivirus will quarantine that information, so it won't be leaking information a lot of times. But to actually remove it, you can either go through and try to remove it. Normally, a lot of those that have malware won't make it easy to remove. So I believe there's some packages out there that will uninstall. I don't have any of them listed here, unfortunately, but I believe there's packages that will go out and remove all traces of a particular program. They can be kind of tricky sometimes. Sometimes you might need to take it to like a geek squad at Best Buy or somebody that knows a little bit more about computers to remove all the traces of it. So that's a great question. Yeah, Gerald. Yeah, don't ever click on pop-ups. I think everybody's probably seeing them where, hey, you've won $1 million, go click here to claim your prize or whatnot. Every single time they're trying to fish for information whenever you do that. So don't ever click on that stuff. Just close it out and don't fall for it. Yeah, good point, Randy. Let's see here. We've got email phishing, which phishing is basically where somebody goes out and sends an email out trying to impersonate somebody else. Send an email out and says, hey, you know, we're so-and-so, we're expecting this bill to be paid, and, you know, it looks legitimate and whatnot. You send that out. In fact, I'm very familiar with somebody that just did this recently where they got a bill for $1,500. They're part of an organization, sent out the check for $1,500 and then found out that, oh, this wasn't who they said they were. A lot of times they'll ask for like cashier's checks or money orders or things like that where it's not traceable at that point. And that's exactly what happened in that case, and that money was gone. Don't ever pay anything with a cashier's check or money order online. Walmart money order or anything along those lines. Just there's no reason for it. If it is, look for somewhere else to buy that particular product from. We do this at the bank constantly. In fact, we've got a lot of our users scared to click on any emails now because they send out so many legitimate phishing attempts that just get our banking associates in the mindset of looking for that kind of thing. We have a lot of software that checks for these things automatically, so most of those attempts never even get through to our associates, but in the event that one did, we want them to be cognizant enough to say, hey, you know, this doesn't quite look legitimate. You know, maybe there's a misspelled word in it, or there's a, you know, they don't reference them by name or something along those lines. So anyway, if you're not expecting an email or if there's an attachment on emails and whatnot, don't click on them. If you're not expecting it, if somebody sent you a picture or something and you're not sure about it, you might call a person and ask, hey, did you really send this to me, or is this somebody trying to get my account information? Yeah.
You use the guard as key, and this helps even for like the bank issues of information. When you get an email that you think might be legitimate, don't use the phone numbers or the address or anything in the email. Like that's an email that says, hey, you get your direct address on the phone.
Absolutely.
Call a number you already know to contact that company and say, hey, I got this email that's legitimate.
Yep.
Because they'll always, the really simple way they can put their communication, they will do it.
Yep. That's a great point. That's exactly what we're looking for too at the bank. Whenever they send out those phishing attempts, they'll usually have a link in the email that says, hey, click here to go out and log in and verify your account. Well, we have these set up the bank to where if people click on that and they type in their information, they'll be forwarded to a page that says, hey, you know, you were a victim of a MBH phishing attempt. You need to go through this training so that this doesn't happen again. So They take it extremely seriously there, especially people run into that multiple times. We can't have associates going through and falling for that kind of thing, because we're working with a lot of very personal data out there. So, yeah, don't fall for it yourself. So, like I said, I had a lot more on here. I apologize. I didn't have enough time to get to it all, but I'm not sure what all Bill had in mind for next week. But if he wants to cover any of that, great. If not, then I'm sure you'll have plenty of it. We've absolutely saw exactly what you're talking about there, where they've hacked the actual site and they're serving out, the legitimate site is serving out that malware. That's pretty scary. But like you said, if you see something that doesn't quite look right, you may call in and ask them about it. So, or don't do it until it's fixed. So on the back sheet, I tried to list out a few things that if you wanted to secure yourself, your network, or your accounts and whatnot, I've got kind of a top 10 list that I came up with of things that you can do that are actionable today. If you have any questions or I can help out any further or whatnot, let me know about it, and I'd be happy to discuss it with you. So, thank you.